This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community, this is the World Wide Wave.
He's an international singer who's just released a new album called You Will Not Die. He was the lead in John Trengove's film The Wound, which attracted the widespread critical acclaim and was South Africa's entry for Best Foreign Film at the Academy Awards. He is out and proud performer Nakane. But he hasn't always been out and had to struggle to be proud. We asked Nakane about his first coming out experience.
Well, yeah, I've come out so many times, to be honest with you. The first time I came out, I was 17, and I came out to my friends and my cousins. That was easy. That was a piece of cake. They were all just so exceptional and lovely. And then at 19, I was outed by an ex-girlfriend of mine and her mom. And my mother found out, and that was not very good. And I sort of climbed back into the closet and tried to, I guess, repair my ways, so to speak. And that was when I joined a very conservative church where the work to reverse my feelings started. So, I mean, I got involved in this very conservative Baptist church, which I liken to the Westboro Baptist Church in America, but without the picketing. And I spent 5 years of my life there, working very hard to not be queer, to the point where I even once preached about how I had succeeded in that.
When you left the church, you went through a really bit of a rough time in your life. Tell us about that and I guess how you turned that around.
Well, you know, there's this idea that once you leave a religion, that your life is all joy and, I don't know, glitter and sparkles. But Christianity was everything in my life. The church was everything in my life. The church members were my friends. They were my family. And then all of a sudden, that support system was gone. But also not only that, there was also, I guess, a metaphysical hole in my life, which was always filled by religion. And that was very, very difficult, because for a long, long time, there were things that I really believed in without any question. I knew that I was going to go to heaven because I believed in Jesus Christ. And then all of a sudden, that disappeared. And then you ask yourself, then who am I without those answers, without those beliefs? You know, what am I doing anything for if it's not for, I guess, everlasting life in the afterworld? That took a while to get over. That was a lot of hard work and a lot of deliberate work, because as much as I've left the religion intellectually, there was still an emotional and psychological part of me that believed that I had made a big mistake and that I was still going to go to hell.
So that was international singer Nakane.
It's fascinating. I mean, so many times religion comes up as an issue on this show and people dealing with it. And sometimes we, in our very privileged position, think, you know, why would you stay in a church? Why would you? But then he's putting it so personally there that was his life. That was all his friends, his family. It was everything to him, and the idea of letting that go was just, you know,
foreign,
yeah. Absolutely. The other side that he didn't mention there was that the church used him as a poster boy, that, you know, you can turn yourself around, you can be, and you can be corrected. What did he say? Repaired.
So did he go through any cure therapy?
Conversion therapy? Conversion.
No, not that he's mentioned and not that I've read anywhere, but obviously he's dived into religion to escape having to deal with other issues. And he talks about that a bit more coming about his experiences and the reaction post-film.
I don't think we have a program where we don't mention religion in some context or another, and it's usually negative.
Very, very true. It is. It's a it's a big challenge that keeps coming up, and we should be able to get to a point where you can be gay and religious, and there are definitely groups around here in Melbourne, in Australia, perhaps not all over the world. Bit of a way to go. Coming up, though, Nakane shares the backlash he experienced after daring to display homosexuality in his native community in this international film. You are on Worldwide Wave.
This is Mahida from Nigeria, and you are on Worldwide Wave.
Actually was one of Nakane's songs. That is Clairvoyant.
Clairvoyant from his new album, which is called You Will Not Die. I think we should get more of Nakane on Joy.
Well, there's more coming up.
There is. But I think we'll have a chat to Michael, the music director, and say we want more. Actually, his earlier stuff was much quieter, so this has got a bit more of a...
A bit more of a beat to it.
Beat and bit of jazz. Messages, we love to hear what you're thinking, and with such an inspiring artist tonight, you've got to have an opinion, so send it to us. 0427JOY949 is the SMS, or onair@joy.org.au is the email. Love hearing from you all.
Now, singer Nakane is also an actor. So having played the lead role in the film The Wound, about a closeted relationship between two men in an indigenous, can get the word out, South African tribe, it was critically acclaimed, including in selection at the Sundance Film Festival.
You also appeared in the film The Wound. There was an outcry about that afterwards, and some pretty horrific things said and sent your way. Was that because that you exposed a ritual, a cultural ritual of your community, or because you dared to show that homosexuality existed within your culture?
Oh, it was both of those things, you know, and different people came at it from different angles. Some people came at it from both ends. How dare you show the ritual? And how dare you lie and say that homosexuality exists there? And I come from the culture, you know, and I understand all the, and I understood and still do understand all their concerns. All I wanted was for people to watch the film and make up their own minds about it. A lot of people who were against the film hadn't even seen the film. They'd read about it. They misunderstood what the film was about. They thought that the film was an expose, you know, like somehow we had a vendetta against Xhosa culture and we wanted to show the people how awful it was, which it's not. It's a beautiful culture. And even that rite of passage has some beautiful, beautiful things, you know, a sense of community, a sense of vulnerability between boys that maybe they can never ever show again. But on the other hand, there's, you know, a terrible hyper-masculinity and patriarchy and homophobia as well within that space. And also, you know, homoerotic behavior. So we can't pretend like those things don't exist. A lot of people have been shut down. A lot of people who are of the closer community who try to speak about those things brought them up and they were branded as liars. So I think what that film did was that it aired a lot of laundry, right, for the community and also for the people who were branded as liars. You know, maybe they felt absolved, you know, that their stories were not, I guess, that they were not alone, you know, that they were not crazy. And for me, that's always been the role of art, to remind you that you're not alone in this world.
Indeed. And I guess a lot has been made of the negativity that came out of that time. Was there anybody from within your community that spoke up for you, that got behind you?
Oh, my God, completely. You know, as much as there was negativity against the film, there was as much positivity against the film. I mean, for the film. And that's what is underreported. And that's what I always like to talk about, that, yes, of course, there were gestures, and yes, they were awful. But there were also some incredibly motivational people who worked so hard to defend the film, to defend us, you know, for making the film, to defend queer people, you know. And those people were queer people, you know, within the community, but also allies, you know, feminist black women, queer black people, and also just some people in general who felt like censorship is never the way to go when it comes to disagreement in art and in culture in general.
You weren't actually meant to be in the film originally, were you? You were just going to do the music, is that right?
Yeah, I was supposed to score the film, and I was really, really excited because you know, I studied film music composition, and even though I didn't finish it, I thought, oh my God, this is so great. I finally have the opportunity to do this. And you know what? I didn't think that the film would have the reach that it did. I thought it was just going to be this small indie art house film that a few thousand people were going to see at the most. And then it became what it became.
When you were growing up, you probably didn't have any particular role models, or certainly black African out role models to draw from. Do you now feel a certain pressure or responsibility to be a role model or to be an activist for the African queer community?
You know, I did have role models. They did exist. It's just that they are not in the mainstream culture. One has to search for them. You know, I was going to say one had to search for them as a past participant. It's, you still have to search for them. You know, there was, in the 80s and in the early 90s, there was a great activist anti-racist and anti-homophobia LGBT rights activist called Simon Goli, who organized the first gay march, you know, for the first pride in South Africa. So these people existed, but they were sort of relegated to the back pages of history. And I find it very dangerous to pretend like my generation is the first few people to speak about, to speak against the oppression of queer people, because we're not. It's just every generation has to refresh, because people forget very easily.
And so do you now feel, though, that people are looking to you as that, as a role model, or as looking to you to lead an activism in support of queer people?
Wow. Man, I don't know. I've read so. I'm loath to put myself in that position, because I think once you've branded yourself that, you can never be a real human being. You can't make any mistakes. And I'm flawed. I'm going to make mistakes, and I don't want anybody using me as an example of how to live their lives, because I think no one should do that. No one is worthy of that. Yes, sure, advice sometimes, because, you know, maybe I've gone through things that I could help people. But to be seen as somebody that is an example of how one should live, or at least what people should do, I really reject that. I think people should find that out by themselves.
That's out and proud singer and actor Nakane speaking to us just a few days ago from London, on his way out here for Midsummer Festival and other touring dates around Australia. The role model question, that kind of surprised me, his answer a bit. I kind of get it, that he kind of doesn't want the responsibility, doesn't want people looking at him, and therefore, you know, if he makes a mistake, they'll look at that.
It must be difficult if you are one. I don't think people put themselves out as role models, but if you are...
But it's going to happen.
But if you are a role model, the pressure to not screw up... It must be terrible. I mean, not just for the Nakane, but, you know, sports people and...
But I think one of the things is, you know, role models can be vulnerable as well. And
yeah.
I think...
Yeah. Well, that was the beautiful thing. Yeah. I'm flawed. He's saying, hey, that's great. I think that's a part of being a role model.
Absolutely. But I think we often get those images, don't we, of just that, you know, someone stoic and just keeps going through it all and not showing the down times, I suppose. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Look, I mean, I think it's just going to happen if he's so out there on the world stage. And, you know, the fact that he, you know, with George Michael, that was one of the things he referenced about George Michael, that he was just boldly, I'm gay, deal with it type thing.
Yeah, but then look at the mental issues that George went through and had to struggle with.
Yeah.
In private life.
And I'm not saying it's easy.
It's not easy.
I'm not saying it's ever going to be me. So it's much easier from the seat that I'm sitting in, isn't it?
But you don't actually know who's actually looking up to you. There may be people out there that hang on every word that you say.
No, I don't think so. But anyway, I did also... it really pleased me that there were people speaking up for him when the poo hit the fan. There were people who spoke up in support. I was thinking it would have been a bit more doom and gloom, so I'm really happy that, you know, there were some voices.
I think his point that if you try and put down art, you're going to cause people to actually come out and actually fight for it.
Yeah.
So by actually making a fuss, they actually created the impetus for people to actually stand up and say, no, this isn't right.
Yeah.
It shows you the importance of allies, though, for us all, doesn't it, really?
And the fact that so many people who were arcing up about it didn't see the film. Well, they couldn't in South Africa. It was banned. Had a high rating on it. So they were just noticing what's happening in the media, which happens here with the various shock jocks and the like. Not us, of course. We are responsible people here at Joy 94.9. The other thing too, this old chestnut that keeps coming up, the lie of homosexuality in Africa, it's a Western import.
Yes, it's a white man's disease, it's a Western disease. It's not just Africa, though, it's also been used in Asia as well.
Yeah.
The laws are white men's laws, though, aren't they?
It's your fault.
I've already apologised once. I only get one apology per programme.
Look, it's always going to be the ongoing challenge, but I think just by being the person that he is and making the beautiful music and art that he is making, I think he will...
He may not call himself a role model, but he will be to somebody.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think it is great, the Midsummer showcasing, you know, these people from minority communities in the program. So not just your pale, maybe male as well.
Yep, so you can say it here. It's a safe space. We've got more of Nakane coming up. You are on World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
This is Eve from Cameroon on Joy 94.9.
Again, that was one of Nakane's songs off his album, The Interloper.
I can actually picture that because his Midsummer show is at Melbourne Museum at night. It's called Nocturnal, funnily enough. I can picture that song, you know, booming out over speakers throughout the museum space, can't you?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Love it. Nakane. Messages coming in, 317. It's so important that artists embrace their identity and are more open, as they're much more influential than many politicians to young people. That is so true.
Mm-hmm.
It's sometimes a life or death scenario that a song can save a person's life if they're feeling depressed or vulnerable. I hadn't thought about that as well. Lady Gaga withdrew her support for R. Kelly recently amid the serious allegations of child abuse and his deeply flawed character. Of course they're role models. I agree with you, 317. There's no way out. Much more role models than politicians, certainly the current lot anyway.
Certainly to the younger generations.
It's a pretty low bar, though.
But just bounding over.
Just think of the influences that are on social media.
Yes, true, yeah.
Tonight's guest is international performer Nakane from South Africa, who is soon touring Australia, including a performance at this year's Midsummer Festival.
Singing, it's obviously an intense passion of yours. In fact, I saw on your Facebook page for Christmas, you posted a video of you singing at age 7 and doing it beautifully, I have to say.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
When did you sort of first think, hey, this passion could actually become my livelihood, my future?
That video, actually, funny enough, I remember the day, and you know, I used to talk about that particular performance for years, and I've never seen it up until 2017. There was a documentary made about me, and I called my music teacher from private school, and I said, "Do you have any footage that we could use?" And she sent me that, and I had been talking about that moment as the moment which was the catalyst to, I guess, my life. Because I remember while I was singing Silent Night, thinking, I'm going to be doing this for the rest of my life. You know? And so when I saw it for the first time in like 20 plus years, it was really, I don't know, a beautiful moment, because I actually got to see that moment when I made a deliberate decision to be who I am today, at least to do what I'm doing today.
And you're going to very shortly be doing that here in Australia. Tell us about your Australian tour, and what can people expect when they come and see one of your shows?
I love live performance. I've been doing it since, as you can see, I guess, you know, since I was a child. And it's never lost its spark in me. You know, the older I get and the more I do it, the more, you know, it never gets any easier. But what I do know now is that the things that I was scared of are the things that I really want to do, you know? I really am interested in the ritualistic nature of live music. I'm interested in the communal part of live music that people, like, I don't see myself as some priest up on that stage, you know? I see myself as a conduit, really, for people to access something else, something inside them, maybe, you know, that they were thinking of or not thinking of. And I'm interested in that part of live music. Something a little bit more subconscious.
We're very much looking forward to your upcoming visit. Shows in Sydney, Launceston, Brisbane, and right here in Melbourne. And an album, You Will Not Die, out as well. Nakane, thank you so much. We are so thrilled to have you here on Joy.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure speaking to you.
Launceston. It sounds funny. There's Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, and Launceston. It's FOMO down there. FOMO, the MoMA, FOMO. It's the big festival from, you know, the big...
David Walsh's, yeah.
Yeah, so they're going out. So that's a pretty big win for them to have him down there as well.
Why Launceston? Because isn't this thing in Hobart?
It's outreach.
Yeah, they're spreading the love.
It's outreach. Sharing the love. That's a good way of putting it. The video that he just mentioned of him singing as a 7-year-old, which is just beautiful, I've just posted that on a Facebook page. page, if you go to W3Joy, you can see the moment he decided he was going to become a world famous international singer that's coming to Melbourne.
And role model.
And role model.
At seven.
At 7 years old. Good luck to him. He's such a beautiful artist. And you can also click through onto his Facebook page and see all the various happenings that are going on there. This is World Wide Wave.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.